3, 2, 1. Live from the studio, welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast, Podcast 597, this week's radio show, which I think is radio show number 64, just ahead of segment 1. Now, of course, in the news these days, there's lots of talk about foreign manufacturing with the new president. There are companies preparing to bring some of their manufacturing back to the United States. I think some of that may have been reflected in new employment numbers that just came out on Friday. If your company is considering American manufacturing, remember Depot Star, American Design Engineering and Manufacturing. Visit their website at depotstar.com or click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page. Okay, here's segment 1 of this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show. Here we go. Welcome to the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. For all the podcasts, visit the BobDavisPodcasts.com. In this show, I've been talking a lot this week about the pace the president is setting. Executive orders, cabinet nominations. These will be followed by legislative initiatives that'll come both from Congress and the executive branch once we get through the confirmation process for the cabinet. On taxes, on Obamacare and regulation and budgeting, and for the Supreme Court confirmation hearings for Trump's nominee Neil Gorsuch. This is all going on at once, and it's kicking up a huge amount of activity in the media. And it leaves, I think, the partisan left dizzy trying to figure out what initiatives to oppose next and how to. Signs at the Supreme Court that were hastily drawn were visible the night that Gorsuch was nominated, and they said oppose, and there was an empty space, and then somebody had written in magic marker, Gorsuch. And it's forcing the media to adjust to every major story through reaction rather than actually doing any real investigative reporting on the news or on issues. Now, I was one of the first to talk about Trump's frenetic pace and changing the subject back on the campaign trail, which has now been refined to a sort of OODA loop of the media getting inside their decision-making cycle in the first 2 weeks of his presidency. It's hard to believe it's only been about 2.5, 3 weeks. Now, suddenly, everybody wants to know whether there is a, quote, war on the media being directed from the White House. They are now calling the president the big assignment editor in the sky. The hard fact is, for Republicans, and I won't use the term conservative because I'm not sure whether that applies to Republicans these days, but almost any action taken by Republicans is going to be met with a firestorm of protest, derision, adding up to highly partisan opposition in the legislatures without even saying whether you agree or disagree with a Republican initiative, especially if it comes from the White House, if you just mention it. Like an executive order, a potential cabinet nominee, eventually a potential legislative initiative or even an idea, it will be met with guffaws and hisses and head shaking and condemnations of you personally, not even the idea. You're a racist, you're a xenophobe, you're a hater, you're a horrible person. How can you even talk about that man? Is this any different in the tone of Republican partisan opposition to Barack Obama's first 2 years as president when he had a legislative majority from his own party? Well, it might be in some ways. We'll talk about those ways when we talk about partisan opposition and how that works. And yes, we are going to talk about partisan opposition, secession and coup d'etat along these lines. Those words are now making the rounds. There's a spate of, I refer to them lightly as news articles, which purport to be analyses of Trump's administration, the election. And these stories have cobbled together a number of events, which supposedly all add up to nothing less than a coup d'etat. Trump is a Russian agent, a Manchurian candidate, or president, and he's going to collapse the United States government into some kind of tyranny, which is then going to be devolved into the Russian Federation or something like that. 3 or 4 different articles with various artwork depicting this ominous coup are making the rounds on social media, posted seemingly by people who have never considered this possibility before. By the way, written by the former social media manager at Google. oh my God, have you seen this? There's going to be a coup and so forth. I told you. What exactly is a coup d'etat? What might such a thing look like? Why are the ideas of a coup and secession suddenly emerging from the Democrat side of the equation, the liberal side of the equation? Part of the conversation about foreign governments or dark forces in the U.S. taking over our government is this question of majority rule as well as protecting legislative minorities. And we're back to many people really not having a clear understanding of history and with understanding what a representative republic is and how it actually works. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. Finally, I think it's time to talk about social media. It is fair to say that pretty much everybody now uses social media. For what I am not sure, Facebook, of course, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat. I don't have Snapchat, but lots of people do. And I'm sure that there are other platforms that people either don't like, use excessively, or don't understand. The one I don't understand is LinkedIn, and we'll talk about that. And I do not find social media to be a positive experience, but I can't stop using it. I hear that a lot. So I want to talk about social media's effect on our national psyche and our ability to talk about things and its ability to amplify hysteria about almost anything that happens. And yet, almost everybody I talk to says, God, I hate Facebook or Twitter, and yet we all still use it. So we're going to talk about that. People seem to use social media for things we might not do, or maybe we would in normal life. I don't know. I'm sick. I want some sympathy. Everybody feel bad for me. Somebody in my family died. My dog died. My cat died, whatever. And then there's the political stuff that you see on Facebook. The memes and the reposts and the inevitable posts about how people have, I've been defriended because I put this post up, or, and that's not fair, and how dare people defriend me and treat me badly because of this, that, or the other thing, and so on. I don't know what can be done about this, because I just read a statistic not too long ago that a very large number of people are getting their news, or what they think is news, from social media. But I do think it's time to talk about social media in the context of our national politics and society, our life, and our and really social media's outsized role in our life these days. Maybe it's time to turn off the feed, or at least stop checking it every 20 minutes. Although, again, I don't know if that's possible. But what do you do when you're in line at the cleaners or the DMV or the grocery store? You got a couple of minutes. Yeah, I'm going to check my feed, see what's going on. And then I guess the other question would be, is this going to calm down at some point? And I'm thinking, no, I don't, because I think this is a new reality, at least for the foreseeable future, until something else revolutionary comes along that people migrate to. And I just can't imagine what that would be, some sort of change in devices or in a new social media platform. So maybe I'll take some time in this show to talk about staking out some predictive territory without making specific predictions or using the news to predict the future, which I actually hate. Actually, one of the pet peeves I have is the tarot card reading nature of most of the people in media, so I hate to do that, but I'll try to do it a little bit in this show. The fact is, for some people in this country, there's perfect happiness with the new president's actions. They don't mind at all that there is a Muslim ban in effect, even if it isn't a Muslim ban. They are perfectly happy with Betsy DeVos suggesting that we might dismantle the public education system. By the way, probably one of the best ideas I've ever heard, at least in terms of cutting costs, or the idea of a very conservative Supreme Court being impaneled, regulations being slashed, corporate taxes being cut, and so forth. So there are people happy with the things that he is doing. Meanwhile, we don't hear too much about that. What we hear is the fact that the left is in a tizzy about the pipeline, or what the president had for breakfast, or what the president is railing about on Twitter. And he seems to be controlling the agenda by his activities. And I wonder whether they really don't know what to protest next. Now, it almost goes without saying, for the left, these protests are an opportunity to galvanize the opposition, to get people organized so they can create a situation where others can organize others still to vote. And I want to talk about whether or not that is going to be a recipe for success in the next 2 years for the left as well. So we'll talk about that. But coming up, partisan opposition to the Trump presidency is reaching a fever pitch. Suddenly, it's the left throwing around words like secession, impeachment, and coup d'etat. What does all of this mean? We'll talk about it next. And two things I love to talk about, coup d'etat and secession. So that's coming up. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. To hear more of the Bob Davis Podcasts, go to thebobdavispodcast.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show.
In the time of chimpanzees, I was a monkey. Butane in my veins and a mouth to cut the chunky with the plastic eyeballs. Spray paint the vegetables, dog food skulls with the beefcake pantyhose. Kill the headlights and put it in neutral. Stock car flaming with a loser in the cruise control. Babies in Reno with the vitamin D. Got a couple of couches, sleep on the love seat. Someone came saying I'm insane to complain about a shotgun wedding and a stain on my shirt. Everything that you breathe, you get a
park. Live back in the studio, just ahead of segment two of this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. We have been having great weather. It actually feels like there's a touch of spring in the air, which I know is a false sense of security, which is why I remind everybody about Ryan Plumbing and Heating for emergency service, because when it gets cold again, you're going to have burst pipes and you could have plumbing problems and heating problems. If you do, you want reliable service. And so I tell everybody about Ryan Plumbing and Heating's emergency service. Doesn't matter where you are in the metro, they go metro-wide from St. Paul. Here's what you do. Remember Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for emergency service, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. A lot of people think when I mention Ryan, I'm thinking about residential, but I'm also thinking about business because they do great business service too. They go back four generations in St. Paul. Ryan Plumbing and Heating, quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business in St. Paul. Remember the number, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, metro-wide from St. Paul for four generations. Ryan Plumbing and Heating. You can check them out online as well at ryanplumbing.com. Okay, here's segment two of this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. For all the podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. Well, you heard me talk about memes on Facebook, and one of the memes this week has been that there is going to be a coup d'etat in the United States. So I'm going to do this. I often have to because I want to define terms. A coup d'etat is the sudden takeover of a government, usually by a small group of persons in or previously in positions of authority. It's a French word. It means coup. The word coup means blow or to strike. And obviously the second part of the word involves the state. So blow to the state or blow of the state, meaning sudden overthrow of the government. Now, as I said, some people have taken to various forms of social media to promote the idea that preparations for a coup, I use that term lightly, are underway. Keep in mind the legally constituted government of the United States is the Trump administration and Congress and the judges that are currently serving and so forth. What's interesting about the trend of talk about coup on social media is the people who are writing these things and posting these things seem to think that a coup is in fact going to be promulgated by the current administration, which is already in power. So apparently a coup would involve the overthrow of the current government and the installation of a new form of government. This is usually backed up by the military and a few other key personnel in governments where coups actually take place, so that the people accept the new leadership. But it doesn't make any sense that a regime would have a coup against itself. And of course, coups usually happen in countries with unstable democratic systems, oligarchies, or in destabilized and volatile countries where the most stable government institution is the military. This is how Hugo Chavez came to power in Venezuela. It is how the Diem regime was overthrown in South Vietnam. It is how Gaddafi came to power in Libya. Sometimes coups can be bad. Sometimes they can be good. It just depends on which side of the fence you're backing. And we most of the time when we think about coups, we think about coups happening in unstable, governments. By the way, fascists did not come to power in Europe in the 1920s and 30s through coups. They came into power through legal election, and then they consolidated their power, usually legally. So evidence for a coup in America seems to be conflating several seemingly unrelated developments over the past few days in the United States and abroad. And I will go through these quickly. I wrote the full list out. There's lots of words. I'm going to try to just kind of edit these down as I speak. First is the president's executive order, the very controversial order banning travel from war-torn states in the Middle East. There is a statement from the president's chief of staff on a waiver issued for green card holders. There is an omission of Jews from a White House Holocaust remembrance statement. There is Rudy Giuliani saying the executive order was indeed a ban on Muslims or intended to be. There is a story on CNN supposedly extensively sourced, although I find that hard to believe with CNN, regarding the process by which the order was issued. This is this whole thing about how nobody told certain people and it was confusing. There's a supposedly a mass resignation of top people at the State Department, which it turns out were actually requested resignations of four or five top appointees by John Kerry and President Obama and Hillary Clinton. And this supposedly has left nobody in senior staff at the State Department except for, of course, the new confirmed Secretary of State, right? And it's being called a purge by the writer because these were supposedly resignations that were asked for. Often, by the way, new cabinet officers and new presidents ask for resignations. This is not unusual. There are reports, which of course are unconfirmed, that Trump filed his candidacy for 2020 on Inauguration Day. You've probably never heard of that. Nobody knows whether that's a good thing or a bad thing or supposed to happen or not supposed to happen. It allows him to raise money while he's president to run again. There's a story from Reuters which says that a Russian oil company was sold to unknown buyers. That, of course, means there's some kind of weird thing going on. And then the idea here is that somehow the Department of Homeland Security is testing their ability to ignore orders from other branches of government due to the fact that some of the DHS people didn't, follow the order of the judge couple of weekends ago when the order on immigration was issued the Middle East travel is issued and people were caught at the airport and there was a stay of the order issued by a judge and that some of the DHS people ignored it. And then, in fact, all of this ignoring orders is a trial balloon for a coup against the government of the United States, again, which apparently is being generated by Trump. And it is Trump, I guess. I don't know. And then it's this idea that because Trump has a very tight inner circle, this buttresses the reasoning that there is an imminent coup, which apparently he's behind. Doesn't make any sense. Remember, a coup is an overthrow of the existing government by people who have authority or who have had authority in the government. Who is the legally constituted government of the United States? Well, it's Trump and the Republican Congress. Why would they have a coup against themselves? Let me get this straight. The people who are in power legally are planning a coup, which by definition is a move against the legally elected government. And people were posting things like, I believe this, or this makes a lot of sense. No, it doesn't make any sense. And you forgive for a moment that none of the citations in this argument would or could be considered evidence of anything, let alone a coup. This perpetuates the idea that there is something illegal or sketchy about President Trump. That's all this is. Once again, Donald J. Trump won the plurality of votes in some key electoral vote-rich states in the election, Michigan, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Florida, and Wisconsin. and a host of other Republican-majority states across the country. The election was a bit of a surprise for Democrats, who had been told repeatedly that the former Secretary of State would win the presidency with a sizable popular vote landslide and an electoral victory. But it didn't happen. The Electoral College voted for Trump in the early part of December 2016. That vote was certified by Congress. What does that mean? 435 members and 100 elected U.S. senators voted to certify this election. These are the elected representatives, the new Congress of the people all across the country. And of course, the president was sworn in on January 20th. So we had a peaceful transfer of power. Trump is assembling his cabinet, which is going to be approved by U.S. Senate vote. And I'm saying all this because people need to understand this is all being done with the approval of elected officials in different branches of government. That's the way we transfer power to new presidents in this country. And whether he is assembling a cabinet or issuing executive orders, whether you like them or not, or whether you like the idea of executive orders, he is doing it in accordance with his responsibility as president of the United States. If he oversteps his bounds, as President Obama did a couple of times, there will be a decision from courts, as there already has in this case, or the Supreme Court. And yes, the courts are functioning, as we saw with the stays issued by judges this weekend regarding the most recent executive order this last weekend. So the Senate is moving forward with confirmation hearings as well. So the idea of a coup being formulated at some level by the president is not only silly, it reflects a shocking lack of knowledge of what a coup actually is and how they take place and how the United States government actually works. Coming up, we're going to talk about secession. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show.
Every night.
Back in studio, just ahead of segment three. Now, I've been talking about reliable ex-government cars, professionally maintained government fleet cars, trucks, and SUVs. And specifically, I've been talking about low mileage vehicles. I've had three Crown Vics. The one that I have now, I got when it had 50,000 miles on it. It's been a great car. And that is why I recommend ex-government cars, because right now they have a line on low mileage, fleet maintained cars and trucks from Homeland Security. We're talking about Expeditions and Yukons, Homeland Security and Border Patrol. So if you need a new car or truck and you need a loan and you have a job, you can get approved. And of course, ex-government cars takes trades. They pay the highest values every day without all the bull. They also have the three-day love-it guarantee exclusively at ex-government cars. Here's what you do. You can do two things. One, you can go online and check out the selection of Expeditions, Yukons, Chargers, Crown Vics, Ford Police SUVs, Ford Police sedans, and as I said, the Crown Vics while they last, but especially these FBI, Homeland Security, Border Patrol Expeditions, and Yukons. Or you can just get your butt down to exgovernmentcars.com and check them out. Now open in Golden Valley at 2420 Nevada Avenue North. You can call them also at 763-777-8782. Although, I always recommend a trip down to exgovernmentcars.com in Golden Valley. It's kind of fun to just go look and see what they've got at exgovernmentcars.com. And yes, I have the bullhorn. Here we go.
Exgovernmentcars.com.
Okay, here's segment three of this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Now, I promised we would talk about secession in this segment. Suddenly, Democrats are talking about secession as a way to deal with the presidency of Donald Trump. California has supposedly placed a secession question on its ballot. There's something that they're talking about called a Cal exit in some circles in the Golden State. Secession wasn't necessarily legal in 1860, but it wasn't necessarily illegal either. So the question was never solved constitutionally. It was solved militarily. So when Fort Sumter was attacked on April 12, 1861, President Lincoln was able to declare a legal state of insurrection and respond militarily. And that, you know, obviously what happened after that was the Civil War, and that decided this question of secession and its legality. Supreme Court decisions in 1869 and I think 1871 declared unilateral secession was illegal. The 1871 decision declared the question to have been settled by military means. This is something that Judge Scalia talked about in a letter a few years before his death to somebody. To a certain extent, it remains an open question because the question of a state's rights to secede has never been settled in the legislature or the Constitution, notwithstanding the 15th Amendment. They would have to sue the federal government. The federal government probably wouldn't allow itself to be sued. It was so-called conservative Republicans talking about secession when President Obama was elected. Now it's so-called liberal Democrats talking about secession now that a president has been elected they don't like. Since most of the popular vote victory for Hillary Clinton came from California, if California were to secede from the Union, would you agree that it would guarantee Democrat victory for the presidency in the United States for the foreseeable future? Very, very difficult, if not impossible. Plus, Nancy Pelosi and Barbara Boxer and many other prominent Democrat political leaders would have to leave Congress. And the left would suffer a near fatal blow in the ability to raise money since so much of it comes from California. So no, California is not going to secede from the Union. This is the kind of hysterical analysis that doesn't help anyone, and yet it's all over social media, and you have people talking about it, and there isn't going to be a coup d'etat either, and there isn't going to be any Cal exit anytime soon. Now, one thing we can all agree on is that there's a lot of activity at the White House under the new president, from appointments to executive orders to tweets and press conferences and antics to the Trump family. There's a lot of talk about all sorts of things Trump emanating from the White House and things presidential. And there's a lot to protest. Can the left keep up with it? President Trump started this presidency with a fierce attack on the media and arguing about the size of the inaugural crowd. He has issued several controversial executive orders. He's made several cabinet appointments that will generate controversy in the confirmation process, not the least of which is the most recent Supreme Court nomination. All of these actions have produced profound reactions by the media and protests of one kind or another, which are now coming in waves. So all the protests about the executive order on immigration were eclipsed by the sudden need to protest the nomination of the Supreme Court, for Neil Gorsuch. An executive order having something to do with the Holocaust only got brief mention in all this, and we seem to have forgotten completely the pipeline protests out in North Dakota because of coverage of that DAPL thing being eclipsed by coverage of protests at airports and now on the Supreme Court nominee. Next week, it will be something else. The president is kind of like a jet fighter pilot, twisting and turning, diving and climbing around his opponents, lining up for a shot, taking it and turning inside their turns and twists, coming around for another attack or diving out of the way, changing the subject, living to fight another day. And I have to say, how long can the left sustain one protest after another, and how long is it going to be before they figure out this tactic and come up with a counter tactic? Is there a central protest bureau where somebody shouts, you know, hey, forget the Muslim ban, Johnny and Susan, we're switching over to the Supreme Court nomination fight, so order the signs and forget the airport, head for the Supreme Court building. And then there's people that are in transit that can't figure out where to go, or do they have so many protesters, it doesn't matter? And at what point will protest fatigue set in if the subject of the protest changes every single week? Because the key thing about protests like Occupy is they were about one thing for a long time. You know, so I asked about the general effectiveness of protests that basically have to, you know, hit a moving target every week. And then there is this question of how many movements and how many initiations of these movements can be financed by overseas billionaires like George Soros. How many emails can Emily's List send out? How many meetups and spontaneous midnight protests on the Capitol steps can be organized when the president is really a moving target? Has President Trump figured out a way to neutralize the left's constant bitching and moaning about everything Republican and everything Trump? Well, You know, I mentioned Occupy. This went on for a while because nobody really changed the subject while week after week protesters held up signs about the 99%. And we all remember the defecation on police cars and subsisting in these filthy, you know, camps, usually sparsely populated in downtown areas by courthouses. And of course, the diehard protests in North Dakota at the DAPL, the Dakota Access Pipeline site, which I haven't seen hardly anything written about in the last month or so because they're too busy falling all over themselves to, you know, wax poetic about Ivanka's dress or Ivanka's, you know, Instagram, you know, statement. But at what point do the general protests become diluted because the force is not concentrated? That's what I guess I'm saying. And more importantly, the famously short attention span of the country directed at some new outrage. Can Trump keep this up? Well, I don't know. The other question is whether the average citizen is going to get so tired of the constant protesting that the message just doesn't come through anymore. The left has become expert at presenting the grievance profile. They are the injured party, right? The victims of the excesses of government power, which is interesting in itself since they are the people who have never, they've never before seemed to have any problem with government power. Suddenly, they're victims of government power. They're upset. They demand a resolution. They don't understand why. Why is he able to do this? And so on. Well, notwithstanding the idea that representatives of a minority point of view do have some protections in House rules and in the construction of the United States government itself, generally, if you have a majority of votes, you can staff the committees. You can, you know, you're in charge of the agenda and the rules. And if you hold the House and Senate and the presidency, you have the majority power, which means your party gets to decide. This is what happened with Democrats in the first 2 years of the presidency of Obama, and it is what is happening in the first 2 years of the presidency of Donald Trump. And I would think that they would ask the question, well, how on earth did Republicans get a majority in not just the House and Senate, but in states all over the United States? Because given the seeming ascendance of the Democratic Party and the left, remember, all the experts told us that the GOP would be dead. Well, the GOP may be on its last legs for other reasons, but for now, it's a very powerful, sick, wheezing and dying man. Pundits are now pointing out why the Democratic Party is dead instead of the Republicans, and they, of course, will be wrong as well. We do have a congressional cycle in 2 years. It's possible all these protests will help them organize and get people out to vote. But in the long run, this is really how our government operates. Even protests, as silly as they may seem to some, play a pivotal role in the process. But as long as the Republicans have a majority and the Democrats a small minority, at least in the House, the question, how can the Republicans do this, seems to be pretty silly because they can do it because they can. And they are going to do it because they can. You have to understand history and context, and you have to have faith in a representative republic, which is very stable. We're all still going to be here regardless of who's the majority in Congress. And as long as Trump has success with changing the subject in the media every single week, then it will continue to be difficult for people to protest his actions. We will have to see. Coming up, the cesspool that is social media, and it's terrible. I hate it, but I check it every half hour. Smiley face, wink, wink, LOL. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Just ahead of segment four of the Bob Davis Podcast radio show for the week. Guess what? I'm not drinking coffee. I'm drinking Hydras. Yeah, I got up a little bit earlier today and had some coffee and went to breakfast, and now I'm back doing this podcast. And I'm drinking Hydras because it keeps my throat hydrated. And Hydras is the new high-performance beverage. It uses exclusive new technology to deliver critical electrolytes into your muscles and your system with unrivaled speed and effectiveness without the sugar in traditional sports drinks, which is why a lot of wrestlers use it. We have tennis players and CrossFit athletes using it because it doesn't have the sugar in it. Here's the deal. I do yoga every day. I practice yoga. I push really hard. I'm not saying I'm Mr. Yoga. I'm just saying I work really hard at it. And I'm doing yoga in crowded rooms of over 100 degrees, high humidity, a lot of sweat. If you drink coffee, if you do anything else, you can get dehydrated really fast. And I just want to say this because it doesn't matter what you do. If you start out your exercise, so if you run or whatever it is, and you drink a bunch of water before you start, you're not going to get fully hydrated. And usually it takes between 20 and 30 minutes to get hydrated. One of the things they've learned about Hydrus is you can get fully hydrated really, really fast with Hydrus. I know it works. I've been using it for about 2 years. I love Hydrus. To learn more, here's what you do. Visit HydrusPerformance.com. That's H-Y-D-R-U-S, HydrusPerformance.com. A lot of content on HydrusPerformance.com. It tells you how to use it, where to get it, how to get it, and who's using it. Join the Performance Hydration Revolution. Visit HydrusPerformance.com. That's HydrusPerformance.com. Okay, here's segment four of this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast radio show. Remember, for all the Bob Davis podcasts, all 600 of them, you go to the BobDavisPodcasts.com. So yeah, welcome back. We're going to talk about social media. It doesn't matter where you go these days, everybody seems to hate social media. Look at what those idiots said on Facebook. My God, the Twitter feed these days is driving me crazy. How can she put that picture on Instagram? Despite all of that, we keep checking social media on our computers and mobile devices. We stand in line at the grocery store, on our device, whether it's the DMV or the grocery store, whatever line you're in. We're constantly checking our phone and not messages. I don't get any messages usually. I'm actually checking the Twitter feed or something. You go to yoga and people are sitting on the mat before class. Yep, checking Twitter and Facebook before the first down dog. And yeah, we hate it, but it has become a national obsession, a constant feed of, I don't know what it's a constant feed of. Here's some fun questions. Have you defriended someone or blocked someone from Facebook because they attacked your post about Trump's executive order or something that you said, or because you posted something about Bernie Sanders and they unfriended you? By the way, I have learned not to defriend, but to unfollow people who post too much political content. I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's left or right. I'm just tired of seeing it. Do you use the excuse, I have to check social media because of my business, but I hate it? I use it. I use that one all the time. Fake news is another thing that supposedly comes from social media. Don't make me laugh. The stream of memes and articles from blogs about the coup being planned by the Trump administration against itself, which is, by the way, by definition, not a coup, as you've learned in this show. But anyway, crazy comments like we'd all better watch out, with an article about the fact that the planet is heating up, which is not a fact, but, well, we don't want to talk about that because someone might unfriend me. Memes that sometimes I look at and I think, what? What are they saying? I don't even understand what some of these memes actually mean. And then I would refer to these only, and I'm sorry, as sympathy whore posts like, I'm sick today and I'm throwing up. And then 50 comments like, oh, I'm so sorry that you're throwing up. I hope you get better. All the way up to and including, I think I have MS. What should I do? Or my mother died, or my father died, or my dog died, or my cat died. I still get alerts from someone's Facebook page, a friend of mine, who actually died. She's no longer with us. And I get posts, notifications regarding somebody posting on her page. It's bizarre. And I'm actually starting to miss the posts that say, this person cut in front of me this morning and how dare she, why are people so mean? Because now it's getting ridiculous. People are living out their lives on social media for social media, it seems like. I've reached the point where I generally don't like or comment on really anything, and I certainly won't on sympathy horror posts from people I barely know, and they always get me because I'm like, I'm not going to like that because that's someone who died, or I don't know this person. I don't know your mom, and I don't know you. So I don't know what to say anymore to people. Like, I'm sorry, I guess. I don't know. But they don't know me either. And then you get to the political stuff. And I've learned to unfollow people, as I said, who post memes and political stuff one way or another. That includes people I generally agree with. I just don't want to see the article that you posted that says California is going to secede from the union, because it isn't. I do have to say I have become enamored of videos. Girls singing in bathrooms, sometimes they're really good, all sorts of things. And yes, fully clothed. You know, videos of street musicians that are amazing. Dog videos, videos of dogs and cats doing anything are extremely entertaining once you're addicted to social media. And I used to go, why do people watch that stuff? Well, now I know. I hate Facebook Live. I don't understand what people think it's for. I'm a little bit miffed because all of my 50-year-old friends have taken to Facebook Live to show me how to cook salmon or spaghetti. They look terrible. The food looks terrible. Don't use Facebook Live. You know, we have cooking shows for a reason, where the lighting is good. It's cooked to perfection beforehand and shot perfectly. It's called production, and live does not involve production. It's terrible. I do love Instagram because you can post a picture that says, hey, here I am at the Grand Canyon, and hashtag it and get tons of likes. Here's my new Jeep in the forest. I'm doing yoga on the beach. Check out my new GAT. That's kind of slangy. But some people feel the need to put political crap on Instagram too, and I will get rid of them immediately. Don't do that. Do not post political stuff on Instagram, because it is an oasis of, oh my God, your picture of, you know, your sister is so great. Everybody loves your picture of this, that, or the other thing. We don't want to see political stuff on Instagram. Now, I don't have Snapchat yet. I don't get it. I also don't get LinkedIn. I do like YouTube, though. And I don't consider YouTube to be social media, but I'm fascinated with YouTube. And I'm fascinated with the fact that somebody who's a tarot card reader can have more viewers than CNN or MSNBC. It's amazing to me. And I still use social media, and I use it to promote my stuff. I use Instagram for that too, by the way. But no political content generally on Instagram. Just pictures of stuff that have my moniker, The Bob Davis Podcast. What I do worry about is the potential for people to be misinformed by social media, because almost all of us have become untethered in some way, shape, or form from traditional media sources. A lot of it depends on how sophisticated we are when it comes to using our smartphones, notification capabilities, and podcasts, things that you listen to that you like, or reading news headlines, like not on Yahoo. Please don't do Yahoo. It's terrible. Notice I did not mention Twitter. I hate Twitter, but I have to say that sometimes I get a gem from Twitter, a story that somebody threw up as a link that I can use. So that's kind of cool. And maybe it depends on what people are in your network and so forth. This is the new media, and it's probably more powerful than the former broadcast and cable news medium, radio or television. And back in the day, there was a lot of misinformation on television and radio too, especially talk radio and TV shows and things. The thing is, it was harder then to fact check, because now you can think about something you see and fact check it almost immediately. The thing is, I don't know how many people do that. I went to dinner with my friends the other night. We spent the entire time arguing about stuff and fact checking and laughing at each other when we found out how wrong we were about something. And I think the main thing with social media is you have to have perspective and context to understand it and for it to be useful. So it can't be the only thing you look at. And I think we need to have a healthy time away from it. I don't have a prescription for that. I think sometimes the best thing to do is just leave the phone at home, like when I go to yoga or something. Leave it at home so that you can at least get out of the habit of checking it, because you can every now and then, wherever you are. What did it for me was I got a new phone, and it had a bigger screen, and it's faster and more powerful. And so that's when I started getting sucked in. But the fact is, we need perspective and content, and we need to use our tools effectively to learn more about the things we want to know about. We need to read books. We need to understand context And that is sorely lacking in the general discourse. People reach for a fact or they say something that they heard, and then they don't even know how to search for it because you have to have some precedent for a search. And if you don't know what happened in Vietnam or North Korea or World War II or, you know, Iraq or Afghanistan or whatever, then you don't know what to search for, and you don't know how to check whether something is right or about or wrong. So you get situations where, for example, people these days think that cabinet departments are actually elected. Now, I'm no genius, but I think reading books are really unparalleled for learning how to spell, learning context, learning how to ask questions, and learning what to look for. But that's my rant on social media, and that's going to do it for this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. For all the podcasts, don't forget to visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. Just for fun, we're going to close with one of the videos I found on Facebook with my friends doing toilet tunes. Check it out.
It's Toilet Tunes 2017. Ah, and my first guest is Jillian Ray.
Hello. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show.
No one can change your life except for you. Don't ever let anyone step over you. Just open your heart and your mind. Is it really fair to feel this way inside?
Back in the studio. So yeah, this is going to be, you know, this is going to be fast and furious now. There's going to be stuff coming up almost constantly given the pace of the new administration. Keep listening for more podcasts if you want to get more information about what's going on, as well as the stuff I do that has nothing to do with politics, because sometimes you just got to take a break, right? Thanks once again to Hydrus, hydrusperformance.com. That's where you get the great new sports drink that gets you fully hydrated without sugar. Remember, no sugar, hydrusperformance.com. H-Y-D-R-U-S, HydrusPerformance.com. Also, XGovernmentCars.com, where they've got the line on the low-mileage Expeditions and Yukons, XGovernmentCars.com. And, of course, Ryan Plumbing and Heating, standing by for emergency service when it gets cold and you have plumbing or heating problems in this cold weather in Minnesota, 651-224-4771, in St. Paul, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, online at RyanPlumbing.com. Thanks all of you guys for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. Thanks for downloading or listening to the podcasts on iTunes, where you can hear them without the ads that are inserted by Stitcher.com, TuneIn, or Blog Talk Radio. And thanks for liking and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter. Appreciate the Patriot in Minneapolis for airing the Bob Davis Podcast radio show, as well as GCNLive.com if you want to hear more of the radio show. And yes, I always post them at thebobdavispodcast.com because the quality isn't always so good on some of these other sources, so you can always find them in high-quality digital sound at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for the liking and the sharing and the favoriting on the hated social media, except for Instagram. And thanks for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command, Diesel Fuel, at thebobdavispodcast.com. All right, I'm going to have a Friday. Talk to you guys later.